extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Ah, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tires from Kansas City. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss. Drumroll, please. Kalen Carr is back, baby. I feel whole. I feel like a new man. Oh, yes. Yes. More of that.
There it is. Horns.
What's up? What's up, fellas? How you guys doing?
Oh, so good. So good. You're wearing your jacket. You got the Oakland roots going on. I mean, it feels right. There's been something missing lately. Kalen, welcome back, man. Welcome back.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I had to do a little West Coast jaunt back to Berkeley. And I picked up an Oakland roots hat. Shout out to them. It's great to be back. I'm back in Brooklyn now. And of course, good to hang out with you guys as always.
And that's the rule. For me to say New York, New York off the top of the show, at least a majority of hosts need to be in the New York City area. Big news. We're basically a month from opening day. Bigger news and New York City-based news as well. Yunus Musa committed to the national team on this March 15th morning. He was born in New York City, baby. Greatest city in the world. I, of course, am in Kansas City, which I also love. So don't take that the wrong way, folks, in this neck of the woods. But the biggest news is that you are back, Kalen, and we're so happy to have you. Every Monday, you will be here. Charlie Davies is close to making his return as well. And we got a big show because the season preview capsules start today, and we start with FC Cincinnati because we are the second most prominent FC Cincinnati podcast in the United States, of course. Cincy Soccer Talk is number one. Orlando City is coming today. Houston, Sporting Kansas City.
I know that I'm not supposed to interrupt in whatever you got good flow, but shout out to Mike LaHood, who's a Cincy Soccer Talk host, and is now the color commentator for Austin FC and is a legend.
Definitely. He's already doing hikes there in Central Texas. We got some good stuff in the mailbag. We got a good suggestion for that rivalry name that we've struggled with. And of course, Kalen has some Texas roots as well. So we'll ask him about that. Also today, are you here for this call up times extra time? We are doing our mashup. We're doing this once a month, having Jill and Suze on, doing a little here for this. We already taped this thing. It was hilarious. It was off the rails. I might have to edit it because we really went in some directions that I was not expecting.
That's what it's supposed to be.
Exactly.
Come on.
Exactly.
And extra time.
How about this, though? How about this? How off the rails did it feel before we get to these capsules when you saw the BBC come out and just as an aside in a nice little Daryl DK feature, just a little, you know, little paragraph, throwaway paragraph, a denied $10 million bid from a big six EPL team by Orlando City for Daryl DK. Kalen, we have already established our thoughts on Daryl. He is a massive favorite on this show. We are rooting for him in every station of life that he has. $10 million for Daryl DK and Orlando City are saying, no, that is not the MLS that you were playing in, my man. I'm just going to throw that out there.
This is still a surprise, guys. This happens every week for young Americans. I mean, this is what our new reality is. Big clubs coming in for young players. But look, I mean, he's gone over there and tore it up already. And I think there's always a question still of saying like, okay, well, this is what it looks like in MLS. It looks really, really good. In DK's case last year, just was fantastic, especially through the back half of the season. But then the loan, it's really worked out for him in Burnley. So it's like, if you're a big six club, you see, okay, well, I already saw the tape. I was already interested, but now I'm seeing it over here and you're seeing that transition. You feel that extra little bit of confidence. So when it starts kind of floating around 10 million, that's a big number. Maybe not like, you know, I mean, Goss, you know, you and I were talking about Josie going for that number, and that was a long time ago. And I guess he was maybe a year or two younger, but I still think that's a big number. So that's why I think the surprise was, why I was surprised that maybe if that was the number indeed, which was reported, then it was like, okay, well, why wouldn't they take it? But I think in some cases, maybe you say, can you actually get a little bit more? Or is, you know, does it come down to at some point how much Barnsley gets going forward or who gets stake in the next sell on because he is so young at just 20 years old. So I would expect to see this move happen at some point. And if you also look in the past with Orlando City and Kyle Aaron's situation, which was complicated and different, but as far as turning around and the way MLS has changed and the sort of mindset of when you get an asset, a young one similarly coming out of college, ton of talent, ton of potential, you're already seeing it realized, do you make that sale ahead of time? And I think we may see that with DK.
And Caitlin, you mentioned it, but like, you know, this is the future MLS. This is how things work. And when you think about it, you look at Matt Turner and James Sands this year, Reggie Cannon last year. MLS teams, as they become selling clubs, are starting to have to learn the relationship between the player, yourself, and that future club. How do you build this whole thing so everyone's happy? And when you talk about Kyle Aaron, there wasn't a clear plan between the two sides what the future was. And so then you get in dangerous place where a contract runs down. Can a player get themselves out without you being a part of it? All these things, which you don't want to touch anymore. So for Orlando, I think there's a lot of different ways this can go. But the key is you have the conversation with Daryl Dike, what the future looks like. And then you come to an agreement of how you can make that happen. So for example, I think NYCFC said in the statement about James Sands' contract extension, he's going to play in Europe. Part of the long deal is so that you have flexibility and control to help him get that right move and not have to sell right now because his contract's up or he gets hurt and that delays it a year. It doesn't matter. You build in that safety. And so for Orlando, however this ends, you need to make sure you're on the same page with the player. And that's what I hope they've learned. And everyone, I think, in MLS is learning going forward. As you mentioned, Laren and some of the ones that maybe didn't go right over the last, you know, 10 years.
And I think the club is in a much better place too, which allows you to make a move like this. I think in the past where you're saying, okay, well, we've got a lot up in the air. We it's a volatile situation. We've had multiple coaches. This player really is kind of one of the main key assets. And it's not to diminish DK's influence on the team. I think he can be an even bigger player for Orlando City, but they're in a better position with Pareja coming in and the way that they have a system and a culture around it and talent all around it, which really allowed DK to flourish and take his time developing throughout the season. And that's a big part of his development, but he looks ready from what I'm seeing over there. And I think if you're a U.S. men's national team fan and you want to see him really push forward, and anytime you can get to a big six club in the premiership, if you can, I mean, that's from playing college soccer about, you know, 25 minutes ago. It just shows, like, if you get in the right environment, how quickly you can progress in your career.
They say Chelsea and Clemson are similar. Shout out to Stu. So you're welcome.
I mean, look, you were carpooling with Bentner, dude. You've been to the highest levels. You've been big six. You know what it feels like. I mean, my thing with this little nugget, and of course, Julia Poe at the Orlando Sentinel, who we love and follow her work, she went and reported on this, said, yes, that's the case. Orlando City has denied a $10 million bid from him from one of these clubs. Same thing from Tom Bogert, Tommy Scoop. So you have the big guns in here saying, yeah, this isn't just a throwaway line and a feature. This is real. This is what's happening. But for Orlando City and for MLS, I think this is a really big moment. I think this is a moment for them to sort of enter the market and behave in the market in a way where they're not sort of the noobs, because there has been a little bit of that, you know, like not getting max value or losing a player like Kyle Laren or whatever it might be. Like, now is the time, with the way MLS is positioning itself, with the quality of talent that's coming through, particularly on the younger side, for the league and the clubs and the executives and agents and players to just be a little bit more strategic. And in the transfer market, you don't just take the first offer that comes, especially if you believe your asset is going to continue to appreciate, if you believe Daryl Dike is going to continue to perform, if you believe that this first sort of salvo from whatever club it was, and no point in debating that, is just sort of the opener. And who knows? Maybe that is just like Orlando saying, yeah, open for business. Hey, agent, go talk about it. Hey, Julia, go talk about this. Yeah, we'll confirm that, because that means other clubs are going to see it. More news will come around this player. And if he keeps performing, why couldn't we get more? In the grand scheme of things, a striker who is 20 years old, performing in the championship, scoring goals, having more than just goal scoring on his resume, that's worth more than $10 million. The market shows that over the last 5 years. Players go for much more than that have accomplished. Now, look, Daryl Dike is still a very young pro. And that's where it gets a little bit, you know, that's where it gets a little bit uncertain, because you're like, he could be so much better. This might be who he is. We don't know. He's still so early in his career. I just want to see them come out of this in a way that, as you said, Dave, the player is happy, the club is happy, everybody is happy because those are the sort of deals that start to build momentum and the next player gets done and the next player gets done and market value starts to be established. And then when the next $10 million bid comes in, we're not going to sit here on this podcast and be like, oh my God, that's a lot of money. We're going to sit here and say, oh my God, that's a fair deal. Or, oh, it's not a fair deal. Look what Daryl DK did. Maybe he's worth more. I'm just happy for Daryl. Like, if you watch him play, it's not the best situation for him as far as style of play, maybe, as far as aesthetics goes. But it's working for him. He's scoring goals. He's showing what he can be. And he's showing that other teams that are bigger and, let's be frank, better than Barnsley are looking at him and saying, that will translate. I also think about just the championship and MLS. Why couldn't this, as MLS tries to establish a market, be a clearinghouse? Like, why aren't more teams saying, you know what, you're really good. We don't have the number we want right now. Like Jordan Morris, like Paul Arriola, like Daryl DK. Go on loan for 5 months in the championship. I mean, Jack Harrison, that's what he used to launch himself into the Premier League. Like, that's where he had to go first. It's okay. There are steps. And the championship has shown, as I said, that there is money coming down from that top level because the EPL has so much. So I love it.
Another piece to it, because I agree with you, which is actually a ton of championship teams are owned by American groups now. And so there's connections between these people. I mean, there's just the reality of if you own a sports team, you're in that club. And so these people literally know each other, you know, owners of MLS teams and owners of these other sides, but they're also looking to change the game a little. And this is MLS's unknown in the world market. And so it creates this opportunity like you're talking about, which makes it interesting. Also, no matter what happens, $10 million will always be a lot of money.
Yeah.
I'll never have $10 million. So I don't think we're ever going to come on the show and be like, $10 million? Get out of my face.
Yeah, it's a nice amount, but that's a good point. There is a value market here, and you have relationships, and Barnsley's all about that. So Barnsley saw the opportunity, and maybe that means they also go in and actually play your guys. They don't come in and just sit on the bench on that loan. Daryl DK, keep killing it, man. We hope you get the move that you want. We hope Orlando City, you get the number that you want because your roster is set up for a good season no matter what, even if we would like to see Daryl in this league for a little while longer. Let us know what you think. 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. We have no time to waste. Go to MLSsoccer.com for all the coverage on the CONCACAF Olympic qualifying tournament, all the rumors in MLS. Atlanta United, surprise, surprise, continues to chase center backs. And by the way, this is some Kaelin Carr news that was on the site. I saw the Boniac twins scored some free kick golazos. So if you want to see that video, MLSsoccer.com is the place. And of course, if you're listening on SiriusXM FC, thank you. Tuesdays and Fridays there. But really, if you're listening right now on Sirius, you could be listening to us on Mondays and Thursdays. We're out at 5 p.m. Eastern, wherever you listen to podcasts. So go check that out and rate us, but only if you're going to give us 5 stars. I'm kidding, but please, 5 stars would be great. All right, let's do it. FC Cincinnati gets us started, and we're starting every single one of these with a haiku that I have written. Dave, you refused to write any haikus for these, which I respect.
I legit can't write. So.
Oh, okay.
It would just be bad for everyone.
I did some research, you know, the whole 5-7-5.
By the way, can I just give a shout out? Because I don't want to disparage college soccer. And Dane Murphy is the Barnsley GM, played at UVA as well, and a former men's league teammate of mine as well.
Whoa.
So, you're looking behind the deals and how these things are all happening.
The connections on
no,
the show.
No disrespect to college soccer.
Wow. Playing in Chinatown, yeah?
That's
Barry
right.
Premier
yeah.
League goes Barry Prem. 10 million plus. Nothing
below. Top leagues in America.
How do you think Daryl would do in the Bowery?
Oh, I would. I mean,
He'd struggle. Come on. That's my
one. Yeah, he's better on big pitches, yeah. But we'll wait for him. We'll be waiting for him. Long time. 10, 20 years from now.
Well, Caleb, you've been gone, dude. Barry doesn't even play in Barry anymore. They moved. What? It's all moving. Oh, God. I'll get you up to speed at the end.
Too much. All right, FC Cincinnati, let's get it started. We're starting, of course, with my haiku here, and I'm going to perform this for you guys, see how you feel about this. Beaten and humbled. 2 years, 2 spoons, and yet hope. Anything will do. That is the state of 2021 for FC Cincinnati. They have been down. They have been way down. They've been at the bottom of the overall standings for 2 straight years. There has not been a ton of hope. There has been turnover in that front office and the coaching staff. Now there seems to be a little bit of stability. There is big investment in the form of Brenner and unconfirmed still, but Lucho Costa is coming. It seems pretty clear that that is the case. But anything will do is my tagline there, because I think for this team, any sense of progress is going to be a positive. They just got to get out of the basement. They got to be in some sense in playoff contention in 2021. If they're not, that's going to put them, in my opinion, right back to sort of the drawing board and saying, my God, is the direction right? Are the people leading this right? Are they on the right path? Because you can't go wooden spoon three straight years and look at your project and say everything is okay.
Especially with the amount of money now they're putting in.
Yeah.
Like, they've made the attempt to get better. Can I just, can I pull the mailbag question from this one up just to set the tone a little for you guys?
Go for it.
At Hope Atmosphere says, can you not discuss FC Cincinnati at all? We're just tired of the negativity. If all you're going to do is pile on more, we don't need it. So I just want to throw that out there for you guys. We already got some spoons mentioned. I just don't want too many. I'm just telling you what the people want, and I think we should give it to them. When you look at this group, it's going to be hard to think that they will peak this year with so many pieces coming together. But the hope is that these are Yapstam signings. He has an idea of how he wants them to fit into his team, and he's now had a year plus to build some stability. There is zero question that this team is better now than they were a year ago, right?
Yeah.
And so that is the hope for this group is, okay, maybe they're not going to win MLS Cup and they didn't sign Papu Gomez, but this is still a group that can be better for their fans than they've ever been before in MLS. And if I was a fan, that's the start. That's where you have to begin, and they have that.
I think the big question is how much better. Right. And that's what I was saying in the haiku, which is there is hope. They have real hope and they have reason for hope. And I think this fan base has been incredibly resilient in so many ways of saying, like, yeah, it's not going the way we want. Yeah, this is not what we were in USL where we were the powerhouse, but we have hope. We believe it's going to get better. So how's it going to get better? In the offseason, they've kind of shown it. They went out and got Ronald Matarrita. He's one of the better left backs in Major League Soccer. They spent a ton on Brenner. He's one of the biggest transfers in the entire world in this window. You have a new defensive midfielder they really believe in. I mean, there are pieces. There are guys like Barrial who should be better in year two than they were in year one. Kubo, you would put in that same boat as well. You would hope Jurgen Locadia is in that boat. Look at the amount of talent that he has. I mean, it all seemed to fall flat for them in the first 2 years. So I think there is progress to be made. But the star spotlight here is Brenner. Kalen, how much pressure should be put on a young Brazilian forward that's leaving his home, leaving the club where he sort of made himself and has been successful, that's coming to a city he doesn't know, a league he doesn't know, with a big price tag on his head? How should that be handled if you're FC Cincinnati?
I don't think there'll be too much pressure on Brenner. I think the expectations and the ceilings are high, and for good reason. He's a club player that, you know, people all over the world are interested in signing, but I don't care if you're 21, and I know that's not even that young nowadays for global football, but still, like, young players, you need a good environment, you need a good system to flourish. I mean, even if we see, you look at LAFC and Diego Rossi, you know, he has Carlos Vela to look over to, or Brian Fernandez. So even if you are a young talent, and you have a ton of it, you still need a good framework, a good system, and some good leadership around them. So that's why I think some of the MLS moves, sort of Madunyanin and Matarrita, will help provide a little bit of a platform of some experience for these guys that have come in, or even guys like Joe Zhao, that can, you know, really sort of help the sort of culture and the experience to kind of navigate some of these games. But I like some of the things I saw from Stam last year. I know it didn't always sort of materialize into results, but I thought, as far as giving them a defensive platform and identity to play from, that really should be where they still begin. And I think that's a good starting point for them. But yeah, the young talent, I think, is it's good to bring it in. But if you don't really have the right platform for them to succeed, it can still be difficult. It can take time.
And to Kalen's point, Greg Vanney, Hernan Losada, right? Their first two jobs, those two guys, their first job is to create defensive solidity so that your team can build off that going forward. It feels like, to an extent, Yapstam did that last year. He cut the bleeding a little bit as a group. And now, you mentioned Matarrita, they bring in and Mococho, who played a little bit last year and they hope to get more from. And Amaya slotting in as an eight who can cover some ground defensively as well. It should be safer defensively. And that allows the guys up front to have the freedom to create an attack. Calvin Harris as well, who we didn't mention, number two pick in the super draft. There's some expectations around him. If you think about, like, what Andre Shinashiki did, I think he was, 10 goals and a few assists. So, like, that's your dream scenario for a player like that. So there are a lot of different options, which I think helps Brenner, in that it's not 100% on him. But when he gets opportunities in the box, he needs to score. He is a goal poacher. He's a Brazilian goal poacher for big money. And the worry is what happened with Locadia last year, which is it just didn't fall for him. And then it started to build and build on itself. And that would be tough for Cincinnati of, and what they've kind of struggled with in their time in MLS is when things go bad, how do you get out of it? They haven't had the ability to pull themselves out of it. And that's the worry. But for this group, that's why you go out and get a Lucho Acosta, as you mentioned, and all these MLS guys who have some experience doing it in this league.
The Lucho one is interesting to me. That one has big potential, but yeah, also big bust. Because you look around, and I mean, I remember fantastic player in his moments, but it was really when Rooney came that it started to connect and the pieces around him. And without those pieces around him, he sometimes looked like he either was trying too much or just not in the right spot. And then for a team that has a more defensive first mentality, is he going to provide some of that cover that and do the work defensively in those times? So that one, I understand why they got it, because, you know, proven MLS experience, right, and has that top end talent. But how does that fit into the system that Jaap Stam wants to play? Mm-hmm. And does he have the pieces around them to be able to like really connect and make that work in the attack?
All right, 22 under 22 time. We've used a lot of time on this podcast to talk about Frankie Amaya. He is just 20 years old. He's entering his third professional season. It is a TBD on whether, I guess, he will be in Cincinnati. It seems like right now the club is saying, you will. You're our player. We value you. We want to start you in our midfield. You need to be here. You need to maybe get the attitude in a place that matches with that outlook. I don't think he's going to be traded. That's just my personal opinion. All the writing on the wall seems like that is not going to happen. Of course, that's when the press release comes through my inbox right now and says, oh, Weeby, you're wrong. But Kalen, there are big stakes for him this year. And that's why he asked to be traded, because he didn't feel like he was advancing the way that he thought he should be. What's at stake for Frankie Amaya in 2021?
Well, you have to think about, he's facing the disappointment of not making the under 23 side. So he wanted to be going to the Olympics. So that hasn't happened. And then he's looking all across and seeing young American players being sold and advancing further in their career. And he's looking and saying, all right, well, where's this going? Where do I fit into this? And not just from a team perspective, from a personal perspective. And I you know, that's where it really sort of becomes difficult, because he's probably also, I'm sure, got a lot of interest around MLS, because other MLS teams are also asking the same question to say, we like what we see in moments here. What could he do in our system? And maybe with a little bit of, you know, some more talent around him, how could he fit into different teams? And I'd be curious to see that as well. So I understand why he might be frustrated. Now, we also go through the same thing where we say, how do you keep the player happy? How do you get the most value out of it? And that doesn't just mean internationally. And that's where most of the focus has been as of late. But even domestically, if you're FC Cincinnati and you're going to have a player that's maybe not happy to be there, at what point, and has real value elsewhere, at what point do you just say, all right, throw your hands up, this one didn't work at this time? But I think it's also a case where, similar to we talked about Kyle Aaron, when things aren't going well and you have one asset that is really good or has a ton of promise, it's hard to let go of that. But I think from a business standpoint, at some point, it might be better just to maybe move on and take as much as you can coming back in.
And the hope is, the pitch is, Jaap Stam comes to him this preseason and says, you're the guy I play through. You run this team. You're going to get touches. You're going to get seen. And that's how you sell it to him, in saying, you're only 20 years old, but no other team's going to build around you. And we've already done that. If Lucho Acosta comes in, he's not covering ground. He's not coming back to take it off the center backs. You can be the centerpiece of a midfield at 20 years old, which no other player in MLS does, and no one else gets that opportunity. So that's the pitch from FC Cincinnati, and you hope that by giving him opportunity and responsibility, he then comes back into the fold and feels a part of everything, and then gets into preseason, the early season, and the team being better makes it all feel more comfortable.
But you want the responsibility, but you want it to be in a system that is going to make you
for sure
look good and progress, right? Like Brendan Aaronson got a ton put on his plate and said, hey, this is all going to go through you. But then he's got Alejandro Bedoya next to him, and he's got
Jameer Montero
next to him. Yeah. It's like, so that's going to put him in a, next thing you know, look where he is now. So that I think that's a better example of saying, we want the responsibility, but we also need the pieces around me to be able to not have it all fall on my shoulders. And look, yeah, maybe Lucho is that difference maker. Maybe that gives him a little bit more. Maybe some other players that they brought in, Brenner, makes a difference. But that's going to take some convincing, it sounds like, from Cincinnati.
No doubt about it. Look, we were going to do the "this is fine" meme, you know, the dog drinking a coffee in a burning room. But, you know, FC Cincinnati fans, you've made your thoughts known. You don't want us to go negative here, so we won't go negative. We definitely will not in this segment mention that you lost this weekend 3-0 to Louisville City in preseason action, and that Louisville City's team admin scored the third goal in this match, I believe. Now, that team admin is a former professional, so there is a little bit of middle ground there, but still, that's not the best start. We will not talk about the negative side. How about we finish here? Predictions. Why this could be their year, and in my mind, again, their year doesn't even necessarily mean that they made the playoffs. It's that they have improved, that they have sort of a coherent identity, that players improve within their system, looking at Frankie Amaya and many others, and that there's a reason to say, you know what, the guys in charge here are doing the right things, they're on the right track, give them time, give them more investment, and success will come. So, Dave, for you, what is your prediction for FC Cincinnati 2021?
I think they finish 11th in the Eastern Conference in a playoff race up until the final week.
That's pretty good. I think FC Cincinnati fans would not take that, but maybe they should take that. I'm with you, man. They're not making the playoffs. This team, with all the changes they've had, with the foundation that has not been stable, needs another year to get that sort of like buy-in throughout the squad, to get that building block established, and then maybe next year they're chasing playoffs. This year they improve. They're not the overall wooden spoon in MLS, but they're not in the playoffs for me.
I'm gonna agree with you, but I'm also going to look on the positive side here for FC Cincinnati fans and say, they had a manager travel over during a pandemic to Orlando to bubble at MLS's back and had to learn on the fly, and a total strange stop-start season. So even just having a preseason with this group, as well as some of the signings they've made, I think there's got to be some reason for optimism for them.
I agree. Hope is well placed, and it's not just because I love the March. All right, let's do Orlando City in 2021. Their haiku, metamorphosis. Poppy transformed the club, but the father is back. Now, I know, Orlando fans, you're going to get mad at me for bringing Joseph Martinez into this, but really, if you look at the history of this club, so much of it, especially in the last couple of years, has been measuring yourself against Atlanta United, because Atlanta United has been sort of at the top of the heap, both in the Eastern Conference and in Major League Soccer, and Joseph Martinez has been the face of that, and so many of these marquee moments of your club have been associated with Atlanta United, whether that be getting the first win, whether that be all the losses, all these moments of hope, whether it's Joseph staring back at Joe Bendick, you are tied together. And this year, to me, for Orlando City, is about taking a step forward, which is ideally winning a trophy, but also establishing dominance down there and saying, no, we are actually the standard bearer. No, we are one of the powers in the Eastern Conference. No, Joseph, you will have to look up at us. You are no longer our father. They got to get that boogeyman off their back a little bit, because he wasn't there last year for them to shed. So for me, Orlando City, what a year 2020 was. They almost got there in a bunch of different ways. They had these moments that just, like, as a supporter base, as people from afar, you look at and you're energized by. So will that energy carry over? Will you continue to improve? The roster, to me, is extremely deep. I think even without Gerald DK, they have the players to keep that momentum going. You have Pato, of course, who came in. That's a key signing for them. Sylvester Vanderwater came in. So Nani, if he kind of falls off or he needs a time to rest, you have a winger out there that is proven that you can slot right in. And they just, every single position, you go through their roster, Dave, it's like, yep, too deep, too deep, too deep. I see quality there. John Moutinho comes back. That should be good as well. But the star spotlight comes back to one man, and I think that's Nani. What do you think? Do you agree?
Not really. And I don't say that in saying Nani's not a star and he's not the face of the team. And if he's playing great, they'll be great. But it's that he is what he can do for this team. They have depth and replaceability on. And Mauricio Pereira is the one who they need him to tick. And when he wasn't in last year, they struggled at a lot of times. And when you look at what he does for the team, it's not goals and assists. And Oscar Pereja has talked about this a lot, and I was trying to dance around with some second spectrum numbers yesterday, which I probably failed on and I'm probably going to butcher and all that stuff. But he is one of the leaders in shots created per 90. He's ahead of Ladero. He's ahead of Maxi Morales. He's ahead of Lucas Zelarayán. So he is their chance creator. He's their nucleus. and no one else on this roster does that. And that's what they need from him again. And he's only 30, and they nailed it with him as a signing in general, and they've brought him along slowly. But that's the piece that takes them from fourth in the East to top three in this league.
I like it. Mauricio Pereira, I mean, the injuries when he came, the lack of rest coming from Russia, I mean, it all kind of weighed on him. Maybe, as you said with Cincy, Caitlin, that preseason gives him the opportunity. He does open it up for other players. And you could go Cash Mueller here. I think his production is star-like. You could go with Nani because when he's on, he is clearly the most talented player on the team, but you have to question when he's going to be on. But I think the star is split in Orlando, and that's maybe the way they want it a little bit. How about the 22-22 player to watch? Andres Pereira is my pick. What have you seen from him in midfield, Caitlin? Do you like him? I mean, he just got into the U.S. national team. He said, this is my squad now, Colombia. I know I played youth national team with them, but going forward, it's going to be me in the U.S.
Yeah, you'd love to hear that. And I mean, he's got all the tools, right? I mean, he's got good size. He's rangy. He's kind of covers ground sort of like, I don't know, maybe a Mark Anthony Kay type qualities in some sense. And then he can drive with the ball, move it forward, and get around it. So I don't know. I think he can really fit in well. And the main thing that sticks out to me when I look at Orlando City is the balance, because we've seen they've had the star players in the past with Kaká or others, but they really do stretch you side to side. And when they get moving, they can really make it difficult on teams with the outside fullbacks overlapping, and they can be pretty dangerous in that way. I think where they ran into trouble last year really was just their inexperience. And I think that showed in the biggest matches later on. Look, they had some wild ones and you could question some of the decisions that were made around it, but they really became their own worst enemy. And a lot of times late in matches, getting lack of discipline, getting red cards, things like that. So I think that's a progression that every team has to go through when you get to these later stages. And Orlando turned things around as quick as you maybe, and as dramatic as you could possibly see in one season. But now it's really about having a much more mature performances, consistent performances, and more disciplined ones. Adding, because they're always going to play with that emotion, yeah, right? And that energy. And that's what makes them a great team. But at certain points, they have to be able to understand, all right, when we get to these bigger matches, later stages in matches, to put the foot on the ball a little bit, get a little bit more rhythm, sustained pressure, the moment's going to come for you, and not just
Nani kind of losing it and then everything blows over in those moments. And that's to Kalen's point. Yeah. And they got a ton of experience last year in playoffs, and MLS is back. Like, they played as many knockout games as any team possibly could, really. And you mentioned the biggest signings they've made, but they were all securing loans from last year. Antonio Carlos coming back, Andres Pereira, another one as well. And of course, the greatest goalkeeper in MLS history, Rodrigo Schlegel. So that was what was key for this team, was similar to what we're talking about Cincinnati. They sort of tried to build it on the fly because they had so much work to do last year, and they found what worked, and they've secured all those players, and they've got all that depth. Left back is a serious question. Jean Moutinho was phenomenal. He's been hurt now for 3 years in MLS, and yeah, there is no backup on the roster. And if Kyle Smith's the backup, then there's no backup right back on this roster. Now, if you're an MLS team and you're going into the year and your question mark is left back depth, then you're in a pretty good place. And every team will deal with that. I think one of the conversations we're going to have this year, and it goes around the Daryl Dike thing as well, is Chris Mueller's future. If he performs at a high level this year, is it in Orlando? Is it outside of MLS? And if it is, I think that's where the Vanderwater signing comes in. You've got Benji Michel and you've got options, but it'll be interesting to see for him as a player how he handles the uncertainty of this year, because that can be really hard for a lot of players mentally. And he's in a really interesting spot.
I think it's also interesting just to see if he keeps it going. Like, I'm not doubting Chris Mueller. What he's done with Orlando in the last couple of years, and obviously what he did with the U.S. national team when he got a shot there, has been really impressive. But we've seen players have a fall off when that sort of thing starts happening, when people start talking about whether it be best 11, does he deserve to be there? Should he be there? Oh, could he go overseas? Daryl Dike's there. Are you going to be the next one? I mean, those are distractions that are difficult for a young player. And I think to say that he's established is probably going a little bit too far at this point. He's proven himself, but he still has a little work to go. How about this from Daniel Kaluli, the mailbag question here. Can Orlando fans get excited about Pato? Should he be the one that they look to with DK gone, at least until May? We figure he's going to be gone given the numbers thrown around. But is that, do you feel comfortable with their center forward depth right now? You have Akindele, you have Ayas, you have Dodson, you have obviously now Pato. Is that enough?
So I think it is. And I don't think, first, I think Derek Dodson's going to college for the spring, so he won't even be able to help while DK is gone, which is unfortunate. But I think the point is all of those guys, if no one's hitting at a high level, can give you enough to get you through with all of the creativity and goal scoring on the wings and Pereira in midfield. So I would be excited about Pato. I am excited. I think he's healthy. I think he's an intelligent, experienced striker with guys who are going to create around him. But I do not think he's going to be an AC Milan starter coming into MLS and dominating. So you have to find where your expectation is from him. But I think it's fair to be excited about what he can do in this group.
How about this? This is fine. The meme, the little dog drinking coffee. What would be the big weakness, concern, or pitfall, Kalen, for Orlando City? Is it just that emotional side? Is it the highs of last year? Is it DK being gone?
I think they'll sort out the emotional side. That experience will come. They got valuable experience in sort of two knockout formats last year, which still decides our champion. No disrespect to Matt Doyle, but I think if DK does move on, the number nine position, I mean, if you look at MLS Cup champions, having an elite number nine is, and I know they have, you know, better wingers than most any MLS other team, but an elite number nine, I think, is still needed for this team, and especially if DK leaves. I'm a little less confident with Pato. I feel like he's more along the Boyan kind of signing, where a similar age, I think 30 or 31, and injury history. I think if he hits, it's like, that's a bonus, but I don't expect to see him being able to be somebody that you can rely on for a lot of minutes over the course of a season.
So, Kalen, I think that's a great comp. Here's the thing. Boyan was a DP for Montreal, and Pato gets to play with three other DPs and a structured team. And that was the problem with Boyan, was the expectations. When there's no expectations, we've seen some of these guys hit and be comfortable because the group exists around them. My big fear for this team is you get into the summer, and Pedro Gallese and Seba Mendes are at Copa America, and Chris Mueller's with the national team, and Andres Pereira is at an Olympics, and Daryl DK gets sold, and then you do have to, then you are really in it with that depth. And can it exist, and can you keep things going without a ton of those guys? It's great to be successful. I love teams going out and getting international players who play for their national team. It helps spread this league. It shows you where it's at. But this is the danger in a summer where every single country is playing in five tournaments. Yeah.
Up front, I do like the depth, though. I think Benji Michel can play a bigger role, especially if people are absent. Tesho as well. But I think it's more that top-end elite number nine that we were talking about at MLS's back. And then DK emerged to be that person. But then if he leaves, I still think there needs to be a replacement. And I think they do have a DP spot open if they do want to go out and make a signing like that.
All right, prediction time. Where could they be? I'm trying to think of clubs that I think would finish above them. Like, kind of clear and obvious, this is right now a better team than Orlando City. I would come with, obviously, Columbus Crew. And then I would start to – you think New England?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Right, I was going to say, I would start to struggle to say definitively this team is better. So for me, you have to look top four if you're Orlando City. Mm-hmm. If you're not top four, I think you're disappointed based on last year, based on the signings that you've made, based on the depth that you have. So I would predict that they will be in the top four, but because I think Oscar Pereira is just going to push them a step forward, and emotionally they'll be up for it. But I could see, you know, it's MLS, man. Like these predictions, write them on paper, crumple it up, throw it in the trash, and never look at it again.
I'm saying top four as well. I think, as you said, there's not a ton of teams above them with their high-end talent. Again, I think they struggle to compete for a supporter shield with all those international losses.
Yeah.
And the question marks around the DK, which always makes it hard for a team, and maybe Mueller, whatever it is. I think that makes it hard for them to find that consistency, but going into a good spot in the playoffs. And a second part of that is, if they do that, all of what Weeby gets to say about them goes away. There's no more of the Joseph Martinez singing. There's no more of the, this is a joke. There's no more spoon conversation. If they can put together a year exactly as they did last year under this leadership group, then going forward, it is a new Orlando City.
Do they finish above Atlanta United, Kalen?
Kalen's back, baby.
I think yes. Yeah, I think they'd finish above them, but I'm picking Atlanta with Joseph in match day one.
Uh-oh. All right, Orlando fans, let us know what you think. On to the Houston Dynamo we go. Here's your 2021 Haiku season stakes. Tab says, press, press, press. Are the playoffs within reach? It's a big question. It is a big question. That's where they want to go. I think I've said it on this show. I think their offseason was really good, not because they went out and went big, not because they went out and just started like collecting DPs and dropping $10 million on players, but because they recognized this is what we want to be. And Tab went out and got the players that he thought could help him be that. Athletic, guys that can press, Fafa, Joe Corona, Tim Parker in particular, Derek Jones, I think is a good one. Maxi Arruti. Look, hot and cold, maybe you get them in the hot spells against your in-state rivals, and that works out for you. But I think this team should be better. But I still think the big question for them is, are they playoff quality? It's going to be sort of the season in a nutshell. Can they be in the hunt at the end, and can they sneak in? Because I don't think they're going to be a comfortably in the playoffs team in the West. What do you think about 2021, Dave?
Yeah, they don't have the talent to sit back and be like, whatever it is we do, we know we'll get our results. They have to push teams. But at the same time, teams that have one logical, coherent system top down with the players fit into and everyone knows their role in MLS, they compete every single week. And to your point, I think that's what Houston has. I think all these pieces come together. If Tab Ramos wants to press high, he wants to put teams under pressure, he wants to generate chances through his system rather than through individuals, I think they've put together a group that can do that. Fafa Pico is one of the best pressing wingers in MLS. Tim Parker, as you said, one of the most athletic center backs in the league. Upgrade at that position, ability to cover over the top on long balls, and then Corona coming into midfield just solidifies things. So I think the ideal spot for this team is the star, no individual, but that can compete in MLS week to week if you believe in it and if you've got the right guy pulling the strings.
Do you like that identity for the Dynamo, Kalen?
I do. When I saw like Tim Parker going there, I was like, yes, all right. That makes like when I think of like Dynamo center backs, I'm like, yes, Tim is ready for that. Bobby Boswell, Eddie Robinson, kind of like I think he fits a lot into that. And I think that's been a spot for some years that they've really needed to upgrade. And I agree. They've got an identity. I think Tab has come in and said, we want specific players work in Houston. Some don't. Right. And I think Tim fits in that role. I think Fafa, I actually think Arruti also fits into the Dynamo system and the way they might be able to get out and run. And then Corona can give you a little bit of a change of pace, that possession in the middle of midfield. So it doesn't just all have to kind of be run and gun and flying. You can kind of give you a little bit of a different rhythm. So I like a lot of those signings. I think the question is, you know, Noah Lees, Manotas, you're looking around and saying, okay, well, who steps into those field. So you have the MLS experience part, but then you've lost some of that sort of international quality that's come in. And you know, when you look around, who are they going to really supply the ball to? Who's going to be able to break somebody down?
Darwin.
One off the dribble.
Darwin.
Yeah. Darwin, but Darwin is more of a facilitator to me. He is the one where he drops off, and when there's threats around him, he can get in these kind of like pockets of space and then find the right ball in behind, finish himself, of course, but I think he needs good players around him and to be really, really successful. Still question a little bit.
Yeah. I in looking at all the data and stats from last year, he is a monster chance creator. He is top three or four in this league at what he does, as Kalen said, which is be that second to last pass, pull into the pockets, pull defenders away, give guys options. There isn't a clean finisher in this group. And there is a question mark, which is if he does that well, but doesn't fit into the pressing, the high tempo, the end-to-end soccer, does he start for this team? Can he start for this team? And so I think one of the most fascinating things in the league this year is what his role will be under Tab Ramos. And it seems like they have a good relationship. And he was moved around a bit last year from the wing to the 10 to see how can you protect him? How can you get the best out of him? But this is not a Houston team that's going to go out and get Reynoso in the middle of this season. So what they get from a guy in Quintero is as good as it is. And the question is, how does Tab use that? Because this is not a group that has anyone else who does the things he does well. And he does what he does well at an elite level in MLS. He almost does nothing else in games. So do you have space for a microwave off the bench? And that's an NBA term, but like that's kind of what Darwin Quintero needs to be.
You're saying he's Jamal Crawford.
Oh God, Jay Crossover?
Yeah, he dude. That, I mean, that's a pretty, you know, look, if you want to press, I'm not sure that Darwin Quintero is a guy that is going to be doing a lot of pressing. whether it's at this point of his career or before. Like, I don't know if luxury player is the right term for him, but it seems like that's more of what he would occupy than just like, hey, selfless, I'm running like crazy. Like, he's the guy that says, hey, give me the ball. Give me the ball. I'm going to make this happen for you. But if they got to press, you don't want to have that weak link. I'm going to throw out Memo Rodriguez just because you're back, Kalen. 12 goals, 8 assists in a little under 3,000 minutes the last 2 years. So I'm not saying he has star quality, but I am saying he's been at a point where it's been really good for the last 2 years. Maybe he can take a step forward. Maybe this suits him as well. As far as 2222, not a ton of options here. Ethan Bartlow is going to be in that. Just drafted him. Maybe he's a good partner for Tim Parker. But Mateo Bajamic is a guy that we haven't talked about a ton on the show because I don't think we really know him. Second division in Argentina. Anybody got any scouting reports on him? He would seem to fit this sort of profile that they're going for.
So he's going to play on the right side. That's what Tab talked about the whole time he came in. They signed him and then loaned him back to Argentina. And over the last few months, Tab's mentioned more playing as a second forward or playing as a nine. But the idea is he replaces Elise on that right side. And the term I've used around heard used around him is running back. Just built big, can, you know, run for days, run guys down. And so in that high pressure system, your hope is that he's just that dominant force down the right wing that can create opportunities that you can play through that's dangerous in transition, and then bring some of the goal scoring, which he finished pretty well on in the Argentine second division, to Houston and kind of fit in perfectly. Now, it took Mauro Minotis a few years. Like, these guys don't normally hit year one, and there is expectations from Houston for him. And so that's the danger with this signing, but the ceiling, I think, is pretty high.
What's the this is fine moment for them, Kalen? What's the, you know, when you see that dog drinking his coffee and the fire's around him, what's the fire for the Dynamo?
I mean, they've been in the fire. It's
forged by
four
fire.
Wins, I think 4 wins last year. So, I mean, pretty disappointing compared to where this club has been in the past. And look, I'm rooting for them as much as anybody is. So, I do like the MLS experience part. To me, is what's given me a lot of hope, because I'm seeing some of these pieces that are not just I don't think are just sort of veteran guys that are going to be good in the locker room, but I think guys that are going to make a big difference on the pitch and walk into starting spots. It's always tough to change, and I think the Dynamo have changed pretty much as almost any MLS team as far as their roster goes, or maybe even their starting 11 this year. But I like that the changes have a ton of experience, which gives me some hope that I think that they're going forward. The other hope is the Boniac twins. I mean, that's where it's like, if break glass, away. I don't know if you're seeing these goals these guys are scoring, but
boys, just make
nice,
the twins smile on the sideline. You know, that's the goal for the year. Just, you want to look up in those stands and you want to see two twins looking back at you saying, yeah, man, good win. 3 points at home, back to the Dynamo way. I mean, really, though, we talk about goal scoring.
What do you think it's going to be like when they come on as subs for Maynard Figueroa and Oscar Boniac Garcia in 10 years when they're finally ready to play?
Boniac was on the, he's their manager. Stuff. He's on the sidelines already. And I'm like, this is the Dynamo. Here. I'm watching it right now.
What is the prediction for the Houston Dynamo? Can they make the playoffs?
I think it's going to be tough. I think it's going to be tough. I think they've got a chance. And I like the direction that Tab is going. And I like the pieces that they've brought in. So I'm going to be hopeful. I'm going to say I think they find a way, maybe coming down to the very end. But I'm going to say Dynamo in the playoffs this year.
Ooh, so I think, yes, they can make the playoffs. Absolutely. I do not think they will. Similar mirroring to FC Cincinnati, I think they'll compete throughout the year. I don't think they'll fall off, but I think they'll struggle to make it at the end of the season. Sidebar, connecting two teams we're working on today. Christian Ramirez, I think, will be available inside of MLS as a trade. I don't think he fits Tab's system, and I do think they have a little bit of depth at center forward. Could be an interesting spot for Orlando if they are looking for someone to replace a Daryl Deacon.
That is interesting. I like that. I don't think they make the playoffs either, but similar to FC Cincinnati, the way they're looking for progress, I think they get that progress this year. I think just having something to build around, an identity that everybody can get behind, is a big positive moment for the Dynamo. And if they have the pieces that fit it, maybe Tab can really get that going. But I don't think they make the playoffs this year. All right, Sporting Kansas City. Here's what I got for their haiku. Good, year in, year out. Credit where credit's deserved, but it's trophy time. It's trophy time. You went out and signed Alan Pulido for a reason. That was to elevate your team to a point where they could compete in this era of MLS when you were so good for the past decade. Sporting Kansas City constantly think that nobody's given them enough credit. I think people have given them a ton of credit. But I think the step after being the consistently good team for supporters and observers and elsewhere is to say, okay, I want to see more for it. Like, finishing first in the East is great, but the playoffs since 2013 really have not been where we've seen the best of Sporting Kansas City. So this year, to me, is about getting the most out of Alan Pulido, surviving some of the losses that they had, and like Gerso and perhaps Felipe Gutierrez. We don't know what's going to happen with him. Seems like that's over, but maybe it's not. And then showing that they got the center back signing right. Because during all their consistently amazing years, that foundation was so unimpeachable that, like, that they were always going to be in the hunt. And that's been what's been missing the last couple seasons. So I think a trophy this year is what they've got to be going for in whatever competition, whether that be Open Cup if they're competing in it, or let's say they're in Leagues Cup. I know people are groaning about that. But you go sign Alan Pulido and spend the amount that you did, and he performs the way he has, you want to get a trophy out of that. So for me, this year, it's about a trophy for Sporting Kansas City.
I'm going to do my number nine rankings next week, I think.
Yeah,
so
next Monday.
I'm not going to give away too much, but I will say Pulido, to me, had a difficult year last year as far as the stop-start nature and the injuries and then the absences. And in the moments, though, you could see how special he is. I mean, I think he only scored 6 goals last year, which would be a disappointment. But I think he had 5 assists. And so it wasn't, he had more than, I hadn't watched him a ton in Mexico, but he has a lot more to his game than just scoring goals. He can really help facilitate and bring other people into the play, and was at times just amazing for Sporting. So I think, that when we talk about number nines and what that can bring as far as top end talent and getting a trophy, I think he does make a huge difference as far as Sporting Kansas City's ceiling heading into this year.
I think that's a great point, and I think it fits with the offseason Kansas City's had, which is, they brought in Remy Walter, who we originally hear he's going to be a 6. Now Peter Vermes is talking about how he could be an 8. But I think part of all of that is you probably don't need as much creativity in that midfield 3 because Alan Pulido can do so much of it pulling off that end line. And Johnny Russell can do so much of it by himself down the right wing. And so now you're talking about, okay, the individuals have struggled defensively for KC, but also structurally. How is this team put together to defend that back line? And so even if it's Gadi Kinda, can you give more cover to that back 4 to make it easier for them to not give up chances, to not be under pressure, to not be pulled out as often? And I think that's possible with a full-time healthy Alan Pulido in there. And I think also just from what Walter brings, just being younger and covering more ground than what's been in midfield over the last few years, they're going to be improved in all those places. And that's the steps forward for KC, is can they consistently be confident defensively and consistently, stop teams from creating chances, which then can allow them to grow offensively over the course of the year.
I don't have any questions about the attack. I know they lost Gutierrez, wasn't there last year. They were fine. Gerso, that is a loss, but he is sort of a microwave in a lot of ways. I think Shelton, Kinda, Russell, Busio maybe, depending on how he plays, all pushing ahead of Pulido when he drops in, I think it's going to work for them. They're going to score goals. It is, as you said, is the foundation there to protect Tim Melia, because he has been under fire for the past couple seasons. That goes to the key signings. You said Remy Walter. Well, we'll see where he plays. Nicolas Izamat-Mirin is the big one here. He's played all over the world at some high levels, 250 games, PSG or PSV. You've got Besiktas in France a ton. Can he be the center back signing that lets them move on from those Beisler years? Can Puncic kind of hold his level from last year, which was pretty good, but I would argue not great? If Fontas has to be called in, or Graham Smith have to be called in, can they perform? Are the outside backs up to it? I mean, my brother loves Jalen Lindsay. Usually he's a right back hater in Kansas City, but he really likes Lindsay. So can Lindsay take that step forward and be consistent as a young player? Is Martins on the other side good enough? I mean, there's still a lot of questions about this back line. And for me, that remains the sort of this is fine moment for them, of like looking around and being like, oh crap, again, the same thing again. We cannot protect our own goal, which has been so, I mean, for Kansas City fans, it's got to be like head scratching. There were so many years of just utter consistency and a belief that you were going to be a top 3 defense in the league, period. And that was down to, in large part, consistency of personnel, and that has not been the case recently. So that's a this is fine meme for me, is that they completely are the same team defensively, teams can run through them, and it doesn't matter how many goals they score, and it doesn't matter that they're first, second, third in the West. When it's playoff time and they have to make that stop and they have to find a way to get by, the defense just can't stand up. But how about 2,222 player to watch? It's got to be Gianluca. He got the 10. Busio went to PV. He said, I want it. PV said, if you want it, you got it. Here's the responsibility. Do you like that, Kalen, that Busio went and asked for it?
I do. And I've seen some of the comments that he's made about trying to take on more responsibility. And I think that's a really good sign for a young player to step up and do that. And, you know, for me, Sporting Kansas City is a big club in MLS. And there's a lot of responsibility that comes with, you know, taking a bigger leadership role there. And I think he's ready for it. You know, where he's best used on the field, I think, is a little bit of a different question. He's been moved around a lot. Mm-hmm. I don't expect him to play a 10 role. He's played the 6. I don't think he's really a 6 either. I think he's more of an kind of an all-action 8, late arriving into the box, can contribute with more goals and assists than I think we've seen him so far. So I think he's, you know, can bring a lot of energy to that middle of midfield and even give a little bit more defensively, not as a protecting last, you know, protecting that back line 6, but more of an 8 that's going to be kind of all over the field and then getting into the box late. So I think, you know, it's a big year for him. Also probably another player that's a bit disappointed to not be included in the national team as well. So hopefully he can kind of take that energy into his club system and get the best out of it.
What's we have to, oh, sorry.
No, go ahead. I was going to ask what a successful season is for him. Because in the midfield, that is maybe a spot for Kansas City. Center back's not it. Winger, they're trying to figure it out. The top two seem obvious. But in the midfield, they do have depth. You know, with Remy, with Ilie, with Busio, with Espinoza, with Kinda. I mean, you know, Hernandez showed pretty well at times last year for being a young guy. I
love Felipe Hernandez.
Like, there's depth there. So what is, in your mind, Dave, a successful year for Busio?
If he's a starter. If he's an option starter, not because people are hurt. If at the end of the year he's earned one of those 3 spots, and I agree with Kalen about what he does best, and I think going back to where I started, I think all of the guys in the KC midfield do a little bit of everything. And so the idea to me is it's, you know, kind of by committee of all of them have defensive attributes, all of them can create a little bit, can be connectors as well. And if you get into a postseason and Gianluca Busio is a starter for Kansas City, no questions asked, and not because someone's hurt, that's a successful year for him because that's a progression from where he's been. And maybe it doesn't end with him being, you know, the next Messi or Freddie Adu, which was the expectations a few years ago. But he needs to get to that point now. And I just wanted to say, shout out in the 2,222 convo, Peter Vermees said this in a press conference this week, and I looked up the numbers. They have 11 homegrowns in this first team. Will all of them play? No. Will most of them play? Probably not. But I think you have to give respect to what KC's trying to do. And it's one of the reasons I kind of like that they haven't filled Gerso's spot. And they, if they don't bring back Felipe Gutierrez, maybe they haven't filled his spot either, to give the Tyler Freemans, the, you know, Wilsons, Barbier, all these guys an opportunity to make those, you know, those spots theirs.
I would be interested to see, and Matt Showalter hit us up. That's where the question about what a successful season for Busio would be. He asked, who's the number 3 winger, which I think is also an interesting question on this team. They've been so deep at that spot for a while now. Daniel Shalvey, I don't think is 3. To me, it's Gadi Kinda. Because of the depth they have in midfield, you can push Gadi Kinda into that wing spot if you need to and still have some quality. All right, how about this? Prediction time. Sporting Kansas City. We're all going to say playoffs, right? I'm going to say playoffs. You guys are going to say playoffs. Everybody's going to say playoffs. So where in that sort of field are they going to be? You figure 7-8 teams in that range. They were first last year in the West, but it was a weird season. We talked a lot about their schedule. Where do they end up this year?
I have them 5th in the Western Conference, just outside that top 4 spot. They didn't play everyone last year. There were some odd setups. I think this will be a strong team. I think this will be a team that will be an MLS Cup contender, but I don't think for the whole course of the year they're going to lead the Western Conference.
If Alan Pulido sticks around, if like Tata decides, you know what, I actually don't need Alan Pulido right now, which honestly he probably does given what's going on with Raul Jimenez and everything else in Chicharito, that's an unfortunate break for Kansas City. You would hope they had center forward depth and Pulido wouldn't be there. If he's around more and doesn't get hurt, I think for sure they're a top 4 team.
I have them in the bottom half of the playoff picture. Mm-hmm. I think that I don't have any questions about the attack. I really like the attack. I like the midfield. I think, Weeby, your points about the back line were spot on. And I think that that limits their ceiling. Tim Melia has had to rescue this team too many times. Now you want Tim to, you know, bail you out. But I feel like there's a little bit too much asked of him at times with this back line. So I think they're squarely in the playoffs, but I think in the bottom half.
All right, they're a playoff team. Anders is going to get at me if we use any more time. Four more previews coming next week. We're going to be back with a mailbag real quick. But for now, it's time for the collabo with the call-up. Enjoy it. Enjoy it. Oh, you know that music. Welcome to Extra Time. Time's the call-up. It's the mashup you've been waiting for. We're doing this once a month. We are here for this. And if you don't listen to the call-up, right now you're thinking, what is here for this? But if you do, you're thinking, this is the best bit in North American soccer podcast ecosystem. Susanna, Jill, thank you for joining us. Thanks for making this a thing. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you for having us. And thank you for recognizing the importance of Here for This, because we feel like, you know, this is something that the world needs right now.
It's God's work, really, if you think
about it. No, absolutely. You know, the soccer God's work in this case. Tell me about what this is. We each have a Here for This prompt we've come up. We have not shared them with each other. We've only shared them with producer Anders. But for those that are listening that are right now and shall soon be call up subscribers, but right now don't understand, give me an idea, Suze, what Here for This is and why it's so damn effective.
So Here for This was born because I would hear the kids say, oh, I'm so here for this. And I literally had to be like, what does that even mean? And so then when I discovered what it meant, like it was saying like, oh yeah, this is, I like this. Like, you're basically endorsing something. So then I was like, this is kind of fun. And so we decided to integrate it into the pod. So every week we will come up with, based on things that we've seen on social media in the soccer world, sometimes it's not even soccer related. Sometimes it's just like, whatever. So we will pose the question, are you here for this? And then kind of make a case either way.
It's basically things you have strong feelings about.
Yes.
And it's usually things that you are looking at that really grinds your gears. It's rarely, like, sometimes it's cute stuff, but I feel like it's usually things we want to fight about.
No.
Yeah, so, like, either way, it elicits a strong reaction. Like, yeah. Either
I did
you
not
are
go
so
grind
here
your gears.
I'm not here for it.
Didn't go grind your gears. I do think that we did the tattoo discussion from Lucas Zelrayon on his calf, and Doyle admitted that he was, you know, could get a tattoo, that was a possible Here for This. We dropped the ball. Jill, you're
that
starting us
here
off.
For this. That wasn't
yeah,
here for
it
this.
Yeah, it wasn't here for this.
Oh, did
yeah.
we say here? See, we didn't brand it, though.
No, not yeah. for us. For
us.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Us. See, because, all right, so this is the beauty of the
perfect.
Whole thing. Is Sue sends the picture, you know, over the weekend. She's like, are you here for this? And I was like, yeah, I think that's so fun because, no offense to Luca, but I thought it was a stick-on tattoo. And I was like, I would love an MLS Cup stick-on tattoo. Yes, of course I'm here for it. But we discovered it during the recording. Either way, I'm here for it. I really like it.
I'm here for preseason stick-on MLS Cup tattoos.
Yeah.
If
That's
you lose, you just wash it off. You
yeah.
don't have to have it forever.
Exactly.
But if you win, permanent.
I like that Jill assumed Lucas Zelrayon had a birthday party, a kid-style birthday party for winning MLS Cup, which I am here for. Everyone should celebrate MLS Cup like a birthday party.
Exactly.
There you guys
okay.
go. You're getting in the spirit.
Hold it onto your calf for at least a minute, Luca. Otherwise, it will not be fully...
It's not gonna stick.
Yeah, it won't stick. It won't stick. All right, Jill, get us started. We each have one. Do the honors.
Okay. So softball to start. This really brings me back, Susanna Collins, to our first ever episode where we took some caller questions in and a guy wanted to bring a potential girlfriend on a first date to a game. And he was like, do I show up with like a jersey of like a player I think she's going to like, nothing, a t-shirt, like, you know, and you'll see in our first episode with Dex McCarty where we landed. Excellent advice. But mine is, when you're walking around, I've seen this a lot, I feel like at Red Bull Arena, maybe it's like a jersey thing, no offense, but are you here for like customized couples jerseys?
Ooh, I did not know that, I didn't see you going that way. I am personally, and I'm saying personally, and that's a key word
like
here, I am personally.
SKC jerseys.
Personally not here for that. Personally, no. And I really appreciate, I get jerseys that have the name Weeby on the back. I have to give them to my brother because I feel like a poser wearing a jersey with my own name on it. I'm like, I never played soccer at a high level. I don't deserve this jersey with my name on it. I feel weird wearing it. I feel self-conscious. I feel like people look at me and are like, this dude went out and got a jersey and put his own name on the back of it. That is so egotistical and silly. And so personally, I can't do it. And that's why I pass it on to my brother, who doesn't have those sorts of feelings and hangups. So I am personally not here for it. And I know for a fact my wife would never be here for that. So it doesn't work for me.
What if Mrs. Ruby walks up to me and she's like, this is what I want to do, and I want to go to the game looking like this, and these are the photos that I want to take.
And you know what? It would be different, too, because it would be Weeby Ewan, because she is an independent woman, and she did not take my last name.
There
and
you
I'm
go,
here.
Mindy.
I am here for that. I am here for that. If you don't want to take somebody's last name and you want to maintain your own identity, you do that. You don't need my name.
Let's
Thanks,
go.
Thanks, Weeby. I appreciate that as a gal who has kept her own name. Goss, how are you feeling?
I just, would we be wear the Ewan jerseys?
yeah.
That's what you wanted to do?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Ooh. Just checking. This is a tough one for me. I think that I like this more than just the standard customized jersey. So like if there's like a way that you can put your two things together, you know, like let's say it says Red and Bulls, and together you walk around and it's like Red Bulls, right?
Because
you're
a couple.
This is exactly
and
what I'm
leveling
about.
It up. Or I like that more than just putting your last name on it.
I'm with stupid.
Exactly.
Oh.
Because when Weeby said it, I was thinking like, you should probably get your kids Sporting KC jerseys that say thing one and thing two and walk around Sporting Park with the right? That's cool.
That's
so
cute.
I like
right.
So you
right.
know what? I started out assuming I wouldn't be. And I've talked myself.
You've talked
into
yourself
it.
Into it. This yeah. is what happens.
Okay,
these are the moments where that we are meant to create.
Okay,
here's what I am for. One note: I am here for this. Now that you mentioned that, Dave, I would put my sons in Weeby jerseys because that's aspirational. They have the ability. They can dream towards that moment. They can think, I can be on that field. I want them to think that. Me, I don't have. I can barely walk.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I could never aspire to anything like that.
Progression we're having here, but it's customized couples jerseys. Yeah. Suzanne Collins, where are you at?
Okay, so this reminds me so much. You know that I'm like a Disney freak. And so like when I go to Disney World and I see the couples with like the matching or like bride and groom like Disney ears, and I literally like roll up in my mouth a little bit. And I love Disney. Like I'm like hardcore Disney fan, but I'm like, no. And so this elicits the same reaction from me. Now, the exceptions are obviously like kids or like parents. Like if, you know, like your son is playing or your daughter is playing and you're wearing the jersey of your child, then I am totally here for it.
Yes.
But like the couple's doing it, absolutely not. No, gross, ew. Yeah. No.
I have a gag reflex to it. I'm not saying don't buy a jersey. Buy your jerseys for the 2021 season, people. But I have a gag reflex to two people coordinating jerseys. But where Goss was going was adorable. You know, just step it up a bit.
But if you get the jersey that has stupid on the back, examine your life decisions. Just examine your life decisions right there. All right, Suze.
Okay. So I don't know if this was over the weekend or late last week, but Sporting Kansas City, Ilie Sanchez was late to training. Now, MLS tweeted this out, and I think ETR, you guys are gonna retweet this as well from your account, so you guys can check out this tweet. So there's this video of Ilie Sanchez walking into the training ground. Basically, the dude gets pulled over for speeding, okay? He gets pulled over for speeding on his way to training. He's late. All the players are applauding him when he eventually walks in, but he gets out of the ticket. He gets out of a speeding ticket because the cop that pulled him over just happens to be a big soccer fan and was a goalkeeper in high school. And so he lets Ilie get on his way so he can get to training. So the question is, are you here for using your status as a professional to get out of a ticket in which normies like us maybe wouldn't be given that luxury? Also, it was so hysterical. Peter Vermes was basically like, you should have told the officer that your job is to create the tempo on the team and we needed you to go faster. That I mean, like Peter, of course, that's like so Peter Vermes.
It's a very intense answer.
Right? Exactly.
I assume Peter Vermes has never gotten a parking ticket in the Kansas City metro.
I don't know. Oh, P.S. too, if you guys see this tweet, PV is rocking like the sleeveless shirt, and it is. I am here for the PV gun show. The guy has been like jacked up in quarantine. He's got like some serious guns.
Working. Yeah, I think he's a triathlete.
Like a tie-dyed sleeveless shirt?
No, it's like a training top, like the sleeveless tank, like training top.
Oh, that's a little wild.
So here for PV gun show, but are we here for getting out of speeding tickets because you're a professional athlete? What do you think, Weeby?
Yes. Okay. I am here for anybody who is able to escape a fine and or punishment for a thing that's not putting others at danger. Now, look, if Ilya was like whipping 90 down 71 to get to Swope Park to make sure he got there on time, yes, give that man a large speeding ticket. But if he's going 7 or 8 over, any of us, all of us, whether it be status or just like buttering up the police officer or just having a nice smile or whatever it is, I am fine for people getting out of fines that don't harm other people. So I am absolutely here for Ilya Sanchez.
I'm going to go out on a limb and guess it wasn't 7 or 8 over. But that's just a guess.
It's probably not 90 either.
Weeby, you get your kids on those roads. You're driving on those
roads.
That's
true. That's true. But look, if he pulls me over, I'm going to look in the backseat and be like, sir, you know, let's teach these kids a lesson about forgiveness. You know, let's really give these kids a life lesson about, you know, not accountability, about forgiveness. Okay? So I'm here for that, Ilya.
Ilya, let us know, 7 or 8 over.
We do need that information.
I just want to know.
Did he not stop? Did he like run a red light? Did he not stop?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, where's he at here? What's the level of transgression? That's a really important point, Jill.
It is. Suze, I appreciate you just feeding right into Weeby's ability to talk about highways in the Kansas City area. On this end, he's like, oh, he's just taking 72 over to Swope Park, just like hook a left around whatever. I'm against this. I'm not here for this because of what Jill said. You know they're going. They, as in professional athletes, are going 70 over what they can go because everyone's got a cool car and everyone's got a nice car. So I'm not here for this. Also, that's how you get red cards and yellow cards because you don't have that comfort with authority. So you need to instill that at all times from all angles.
Look at that.
Wow, bringing it back to the soccer pitch. Wow. Could you imagine that? That's not something that we all always do.
If Ilya talked back to the cop, would it be dissent or what would we call that? Sorry, that was an awful refereeing joke. I'll just see myself out right now. I know nobody's here for that. All right, Dave, you're up.
No, Jill didn't say if she's here or not.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I just got involved. I'm not here for the speeding tickets because I don't want you to speed, but I am so here for dropping that, like, to get a good reservation.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So depending on the need, I get it.
But I would do it too. If I was a celebrity and I was speeding, I would totally use my identity to get out of it.
Would you do that?
So I'm not here for it, but I'm saying I would do it.
In modern day, would you do that? When you know that maybe that can be, you know, the video of you begging on your celebrity status could be leaked out.
Like from the
Or would you just be like, you wouldn't say anything, you're like, I hope he recognizes me as Ilya Sanchez.
That's what I'd go with.
Yeah. Please, God, recognize me. All right, Dave, what do you got, man?
So mine is we are doing our team capsule starting today, and one of them was Orlando City. So I'm deep in the everywhere trolling, and a video came up of Orlando City in a weight session. And I hate working out more than anything in the world. I've done a lot in quarantine. It's miserable. And Mauricio Pereira is doing his weights, and Pedro Gallese is being hilarious right next to him. And then Nani comes up, and he's flexing. And I'm like, I would work out with Orlando City's team. I think this might be the most fun group in Major League Soccer. Mm-hmm. Are you here for it or not?
Hitting the weight room with Orlando City. I don't know if I'd get out of there alive, so I'm going to say my answer is no for a variety of reasons. I'd probably drop a weight on my own head, and I don't know if Joseph Martinez would be very happy.
Wow.
I didn't mean to box you into a corner there.
You did get boxed in. I didn't even think about that. Yeah,
exactly.
But you have purple lights in the background. You're ready for it.
They're magenta.
Sorry.
It's not showing up. I'm here for it 100% because I feel like if Nani were anywhere in my like periphery while I'm working out, that's just like extra motivation for me.
Yes.
Because Nani is ridiculous. The man is a machine. So I just feel like overall it would benefit my health.
So the entire video, he keeps pulling the camera and flexing.
And
like
he's in
the right train. And the camera guy's there, and he's just flexing. And he's looking good.
Yes, he is.
I'm here for this on the motivation side, Suze. I struggle for motivation on that front. So to be around other people who will make me fully understand that I need to put all that work in to get anywhere close to that level, that would be extremely helpful for me in my quest to lose my COVID-19 and burgeoning dad bod. So I would be here for that every single time. Obviously, you're here for that, Dave. Here is mine. We talked to Bruce Arena on the last week's show. If you did not listen to that podcast, go do so. All about the Revs, but also about the U.S. national team in 22 and 26. He didn't know that Yunus Musa was going to be in the squad. He didn't know Yunus was going to be in, so maybe that might change his opinion. But are you here for a Bruce Arena podcast? And if not, who would your MLS podcast be hosted by, and what would it be called?
Great question. So this is a reoccurring podcast.
Yes, we are. This is in the Extra Time Call Up Podcast Network. We are now producing this. Yes, a coach, a player, an administrator, a figure, a personality. It could be anybody. As long as they have MLS connections, bingo. It's a go.
Wow.
Yeah. You want me to throw some out? I can prime the pump here a little bit if you'd like. We've got Benny Ball, the podcast by Ben Olson, Soccer, Art, and Life. First guest, Breck Shea.
Oh, wow. That's a good
one. I really want to buy some Ben Olson art, but it's far too pricey for me.
Jeff Fry in there, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's some good artists around. How about this? Yeah. You'll like this, Jill. The Father is Back, the podcast by Joseph Martinez.
Yes. Yes.
This is good.
How about Hot Boys, Kevin Molino, talking to other Caribbean players about their careers and lives?
I like that. I mean, I'm in favor of anything.
Bob and Bruce, each coast. Bob and Bruce. Bruce didn't know who his co-host would be. He said, Dave O'Brien, I disagree, Bob. Or I disagree, Bruce. You got to bring Bob. It's got to be you and Bob. Go ahead.
I have it. Okay. I love the Bruce Arena idea because you just never know what's going to come out of that guy's mouth. And it's always entertaining. But you get Bruce and Brian Dunseth to do it together while Brian Dunseth does his Bruce Arena. So it's like a double dose.
Double
of Bruce.
Bruce.
Double
yeah.
Bruce. Bruce squared.
Uh-huh. Bruce and Bruce.
Yep. That's what I'm
here for that.
Here for that.
All right. Last suggestion. P and Candle, Chicharito and Carlos Vela, reminiscing on their careers, their time with El Tri, and being parts of an opposite of a rivalry in MLS and LA. That's my last pitch. If we can get any of these on board, the Extra Time Call-Up Network is just going to keep rocketing to the moon. Can't stop us. Tell people what's coming on Tuesday.
Love it. Guys, we are going to have Mike LaBelle on the call-up because it is the EMLS Cup final this weekend, and I will be on the desk. Mike LaBelle will be doing the calls for those matches. So he's going to give us some insight into that EMLS gaming world, which is kind of fascinating. And Jill and I are also, it's our here for this, but it's kind of like our season preview. We're basically going to be talking about one thing we're excited about for each home opener. Right, Jill? Is that what we decided?
Yep. Took the words right out of my mouth. That's what we're doing.
So yeah,
it'll be great.
The call up.
I just want to throw in there, we're having Mike LaBelle on because, okay, yeah, we want to talk about the MLS Cup and all that, but we really just want to know, like, how do you become an influencer and cool. How do you get all these pictures of yourself just like eating a slice of pizza? Like, how does that happen? And why do 50,000 people like it? We'll
do you think Mike LaBelle gets out of tickets?
Yes, I do. I do. 100%.
I don't think so.
Being nervous. Yeah, I'm not sure either. I don't think so either. Anyway, the call up, go subscribe. Make sure you're listening. They're now once a week. So you get double the call up every single week. Check them out. Go follow them on Twitter. We'll be retweeting, obviously, the tweets that we talked about in these times. We are absolutely here for this. We will see you guys next month.
Thanks for having us, guys. We love you, Extra Time.
One more month, and we'll be back. Back to the mailbag, everybody. Well, that was fun. A lot of laughs there with Jill and Suze. Go subscribe to the call up. Look, you got a double trouble deal going. You got us Monday and Thursday. You got them midweek. They're weekly now. You can get here for this and some great interviews as well. So they'll be back in April, right before the season starts, to do some predictions with us. As we get to that point, we're going to go through what now? It's going to be 23 other teams in Major League Soccer. 10 minutes on all of those. So look forward to that in the next month. Mailbag time, 401-2060-MLS, extratimeandmlssoccer.com. Take us away, Dave.
So I'm glad Kaylin's finally back because we've had a few weeks where we've kind of been in the trenches.
About Texas?
On some Texas talk. So Chris emailed in, says, howdy, y'all. So again, you know it's real.
Clearly Texan.
Established. He says, almost halfway between the two towns of Dallas and Austin along the I-35 corridor lies the small town of West Texas, which carries a significant Czech heritage. While at first glance, the town may seem unassuming, with a population of under 3,000 at last census, it is a must stop for kolaches, a Czech pastry that can contain either sweet or savory fillings. Sold. And the Czech stop is a well-known regional gem. Thus, gentlemen, I give you the Kolaches Cup for the Dallas-Austin rivalry. Pros, who doesn't like baked goods, ties into the wider Texas landscape, not just the two cities, avoids any problematic association with Waco, the other town close to the midpoint of the rivalry. Don't really know what that means, but fine with it. Cons, bad for your waistline, not a nationally known feature of Texas, but known in the region. And alternatively, it could derive some name from the Crash at Crush, a historical event that happened near the same area as a publicity stunt for the local railroad. Who knew? 30,000 people came out to watch that. There's your pitch from our guy.
By the way, Chris, you didn't say what the Crash at Crush is. That's two locomotives who were sped in the same direction on the same tracks into a head-on collision, which that's incredible spectator sport right there. And it's kolaches, no?
I don't know.
I don't know either now.
Where do I come in on this? I'm not like a Texas historian. I lived there for like four years.
You know, if you rode Caitlin, through West Texas. More than anyone else.
Didn't know, you know, there's a lot of pastries.
No, but we've been talking about, because we brought it up, and then someone from Houston emailed in and was like, it'll be the I'm More Hipster Cup between Dallas and Austin, who doesn't care. So then we got a little Houston hate. So what's the vibes? What's the city's going to be like?
What do you think the triangle is going to be?
El Capitan.
I was doing the legwork researching Austin on any off weekend in Houston. I was driving up to Austin, but more just to have a good time than anything, not really doing the soccer part. But I don't know. I'm really intrigued by it. I mean, Austin was the shorter drive from Houston, 2.5 hours. So, Dallas, never really been a huge fan
of. Here comes the mail.
That's okay. I don't think that's any secret here.
Yeah, that's true.
But, you know, there's the rivalry between the two sides. But I think adding that sort of third part to the piece with Austin is going to be amazing. And, I think instantly probably one of the top road trips in MLS.
Let us know, 401-206-0MLS, actuallymanilasoccer.com. How do you pronounce that pastry name? I'm pretty sure it's kolaches, but I with my history, you can't be too sure. One more and we'll get out of here.
CM Leota says, Keaton Parks better than Darlington Nagbe? Are you bleeping kidding me? All the respect I have for Doyle built over the last decade has completely vanished. He is now on Ben Bear level. Complete schmuck. That's Yiddish for not good words.
During the course of this show,
some semblance of sanity in the pod. We also had someone who emailed in and said, Jimmy Maurer has to be top five in goalkeepers. Goss is crazy. So we all get it a little bit, but
I got a text actually in the middle of this taping from a player in Major League Soccer who said, just saw a graphic of Doyle's top five center midfields. All caps, trash, laughing emoji. Mm-hmm. He is better than that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Anonymous sources. Weeby's got them all.
Anonymous sources say that was a trash center mid list. We're going to do the number 10s on Thursday's show, I believe, and then the number 9s again with you, Kalen, on Monday. Big thanks to the call for joining us and hanging out. Thank you for sticking with us here, because we're going to give you everything you need to know ahead of the 2021 MLS season. A lot more team capsules coming. We'll put out those tweets asking for questions about the specific teams as they come.
Can
hit us up.
Right,
we're
now
using them to shape it. Sure.
So Thursday should be RSL, Seattle, DC, and Toronto. So if you're a fan of one of those teams, hit us up with what you think we should talk about, questions, answers to the topics we've already had. Mm-hmm. We'll lead these conversations. We want to give you guys what you need.
Oh, and you know what? We'll end it here. Kalen, it's been wonderful to have you back. I miss talking to you every single week, man. In these COVID times, pandemic times, this is my social hour, and I have had a huge hole in my life without Kalen Carr. So thank you for making your triumphant return. We will see you next Monday. With that, everybody, enjoy your week.